second hour, Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on this Wednesday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We said we would talk with Bob Nightingale from USA Today, and what are the future plans for Major League Baseball? He's written about that, and he is now on the line with us. Bob, how you doing?
Yeah, doing well. You got yourself?
Oh, we're hanging in here 6-plus weeks doing it from home, and who knows how much longer. Maybe 6 more weeks, but that's all right. We'll just keep plugging along, doing what we do. I guess the question everybody wants to know who's a baseball fan is how much longer will they be before they hit the field? And I thought your first sentence was pretty good. Maybe it's a dream scenario, but you get into kind of the latest layer of what Major League Baseball is thinking about for late June or early July. So why don't you lay it out there for us, and we'll digest it and go a little bit deeper.
Well, what they're hoping for is, yeah, Major League Baseball, you know, ramps up and report to spring training, the 2.0 version, and in early June, start playing games by late June, no later than July 4th weekend, which would be beginning on Thursday, July 2nd. You know, get in at least 100 games, and then have a expanded postseason tournament, and go from there. And what they would do is realign baseball, so we wouldn't have American League and National League. We would just have 3 10-team divisions.
It started off in like the whole Phoenix, Glendale / that whole area. Then it shifted to maybe we'll do the training camps, spring training sites. We'll use Arizona and Florida. Now it's let's just go on and do it the home stands. The different layers of this, Bob, has been interesting to for them to figure out what's the right way or where is the right way to play these games.
Yeah, with states opening up, you know, they're hopeful that, hey, at least play in the stadiums, you know, with no fans, but at least I think provide more of a normalcy so fans can sit back at home and watch their teams and ballparks they're familiar with. The players can have their own clubhouses back, their own environment they're used to. Because before, you know, the players did not want to be isolated. They did not want to be, you know, stuck in Arizona and Florida all season. You know, they want to, you know, be at home games just like they do during normal regular season. So, you know, the last thing baseball wanted was having star players like, you know, Clayton Kershaw and Mike Trout said, hey, we're not going to do this. If you want to play without us, fine, but we're not doing it. So, you know, you didn't want a lot of the star players staying home. You want everybody on board.
Well, that's a good lead-in. Nice segue to my next question. Do you think everybody's going to be on board if they can figure out the right thing to do, and if indeed they are coming back in the month of June and getting cranked up in preparation for whatever, 100 games, whatever it may be, do you think there's going to be players that are going to stand up and say, wait a minute, I'm just not comfortable doing this. I don't feel like this is safe, and I think I'm just going to stay at home with my family. Do you think that's going to happen?
I don't think it will be, but hey, if someone does feel uncomfortable, they certainly have the right, you know, to sit out. You're not going to get paid, but you have the right to do that. But you know that's the point too. You know, you got to answer to your teammates and fans, everything else. You know why you're not playing and that sort of thing when everybody else is. So you know, it's not impossible that may happen, but I think unlikely. You know, if you're playing, you know, with the in a safe environment, you know, playing where you're able to live at home and be with your family.
Talking to Bob Nightingale from USA Today, we're talking about the proposed plan that Major League Baseball is maybe piecing together here. So for people that haven't seen this, this would put basically a geography map, and you take the East, for example, and you have the Yankees and Mets in the same division with the Red Sox, the Nats, the Orioles, the Phillies, the Pirates, the Blue Jays, Rays, and Marlins. So, Bob, just think about with that. The Cubs and White Sox would be in the same division, the Dodgers and the Angels. This would be quite different for all those baseball traditionalists, but you would have to just go with the flow.
Yeah, it would almost be like interleague baseball, you know, every day sort of thing. It's like, you know, that's where they introduced interleague play, just to kind of spice things up. And this would spice it up in a big way. I mean, you'd probably have a universal DH and everything else. But yeah, baseball wants to realign at some point. You know, they're talking about doing that, certainly if they ever have expansion in places like Nashville. But, you know, in 2022, It gives them a chance to even do some sort of realignment if they wish. Maybe even abolish the National League, American League as we know them.
Bob, they may not have even gotten this far in the planning, but how would you build a minor league team? Or what, for example, the Nashville Sounds, would AAA baseball exist? How would you have contingency plans for injured players?
Well, you would have those guys still, hanging out with the major league club and working out. Worst comes to worst, I think what they would do is have the minor league teams in the major league spring training ballparks in Arizona and Florida continue to work out. You're almost like a taxi squad, and you can play against the other minor league teams in the spring training facilities. But it's hard to see that teams can play in Nashville and other minor league ballpark with no fans, and without fans, there's no revenue whatsoever for minor league baseball. So it's tough to see minor league baseball being played in their traditional home ballparks.
So would that extend then to some of the lower minor leagues? Would they just be in basically an extended spring training throughout the summer?
Absolutely, yeah. So you don't want to slow their development or completely stop it. So at least then, you can have these guys still working out and playing games against the, other minor league affiliates, in the states of Arizona and Florida, that sort of thing. So, last thing you want to do is to, slow a guy down completely and, almost kill his career before it even starts.
So, Bob, with that in mind, I know the NHL right now has a players committee, and they're talking to league officials, they're talking to the health experts. Does baseball have something similar? How does the Players Association have representation, and how are they working the talks?
Well, they certainly do have representation. They talk to health officials every day, just like MLB officials. And, once they have a plan concrete, then they'll go up to the players, like, here's our plan. Here's what the pay structure will be. You guys will have to take a slight pay cut here because we're not going to have fans in the stands, at least for the beginning. So that's a 30% or 40% loss in revenue. So that'll take a couple of weeks of negotiations, probably the size of the rosters and everything else.
Bob Nightingale is with us from USA Today. So you just led me right to my question of fans in the stands. We know that this would probably start without fans. Do you think that eventually, by the time the season wraps up, that things could be back to normal in the sense that there are some fans in the stands, or do you feel like that we're just going to see a full season without fans?
Yeah, I think that their hope is some fans in stands, not sellouts or anything like that, but maybe a few thousand people, where you can every other row type thing or every third seat. You can certainly distribute the seats, the tickets that way. So their hope is there's at least some fans before this year is done. And then come postseason time, maybe you can, have at least the stands, a quarter field, half field, whatever the health guidelines call for. But, yeah, their hope is there is some fans before this is all said and done.
Bob, going back to something that you said earlier about, possible realignment, that they've looked at it, that this could be a way to experiment with that. In your mind, do you think that baseball should realign? Like, should they go ahead and make some changes and maybe even do away with the National League and American League?
I hate to see them do away with the two leagues, but, my realignment, and we've seen it before, do it geographically and you save money, travel-wise and everything else. So at least something different, spice some things up. It's much easier to do that, of course, if you have, new cities involved. If Nashville gets, a new team, Tampa Bay Rays moving to Nashville or Oakland or something like that. So there's certainly ways to do that, and it's a lot easier to do that. If we have new cities all of a sudden, you wouldn't want Nashville playing in the, in the AL East or the AL West.
You've brought Nashville up a few times. So do you feel like, let's say, the next 10 years that it's a reality that baseball could be here?
I think very possible. I mean, I think of all the cities when baseball's talking about expansion, Nashville jumps out the most, even more so than Charlotte, North Carolina. So, I think Nashville is very realistic, Nashville, Montreal, you know, perhaps Portland. I'm not sure about Las Vegas, but yeah, it would certainly be right on top of the pecking order.
Do you feel like that baseball would like to expand, though, add teams, that's their ultimate goal, whether it's 32 or 34, whatever the number may be?
They would like to have 32. The 30 is just, you know, with the two uneven numbers in both leagues, it makes it cumbersome. So they'd love to have 32. But, you know, to do that, you got to take care of the stadium situations in Oakland and Tampa. So it might be more realistic just that one of those franchises, moves to Nashville instead.
Well, we will see how it all plays out. Hey, Bob, we appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you.
Bob Nightingale from USA Today. And Willie, just to run through this real quick, in his article he lays out what the divisions would look like. You mentioned it, that your Mets would be in the same division as the Yankees, which I think would be kind of fun. And then the Red Sox, Nationals, Orioles, Phillies, Pirates, Blue Jays, Rays, and the Marlins. You would have all the Western teams in the Western division, so Dodgers, Angels, Giants, Athletics, Padres, Diamondbacks, Rockies, Rangers, Astros, Mariners, and then the Central, Cubs, White Sox, Brewers, Cardinals, Royals, Reds, Indians, Twins, Braves, and Tigers. So we could have some fun at the radio station.
Indians and the Braves in the
Indians
same
and
division.
Braves. I know. That could be interesting.
You and Darren.
I like it. I mean, I think it's, you know, looking at the future, and you and I, you're a little more of a purist than I am, but I like small ball. I like the National League. But if they ultimately decided that, hey, they're going to do the DH across the board, I wouldn't lose sleep over it. But kind of experimenting with some realignment, I think that could be kind of cool.
Well, out of necessity, this is probably what they're going to have to do. And then I guess at the end of the season, presumably, if they can play the season, then they can see what they liked and see how it works. My mindset is traditionalist. I like
the
traditions, and I love the American League and the National League and the contrast between the two. So I would not be of the mindset this is how it's going to stay, but I guess we'll wait and see. I guess just like many people, I'm just hoping that we can play, you know, and just have a season. And so they're tossing out maybe July 1st, somewhere there, July 2nd,
yep,
to try to play somewhere between 100 and 110 games. So let's talk about some of this stuff when we come back. And you know, he mentioned Nashville a couple of times. I have some thoughts on that, and it's been a while since we kicked that one around. But
sure. It
never ceases to amaze me how many people from afar look at Nashville and say, boy, that's a Major League Baseball market. But it's certainly a lot more complicated than that.
Well, we'll talk about it when we come back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, good stuff from Bob Nightingale, USA Today. Before we get into that, by the way, Tim Hasselbeck will check in with us at high noon. And right now, it looks like the NFL is debating on whether to further postpone the 2020 schedule release. So they are batting that around of just holding off on that. And the Jameis Winston deal has been put out there, and it's a one-year deal with the Saints. And if you guys haven't seen the money, have you?
I haven't, actually. I heard it was out there, and I meant to go look it up, and I got distracted doing
care to guess?
So one-year deal, I'm going to say about $7
million. About $7 million. Willie, have you seen it?
I have not.
Okay, what's your guess?
I'm going to say it's incentivized. I'm thinking Ryan Tannehill would be kind of a marker. So I think Chase is close. I would say I'm going to go a little higher. I'll say $8 million with incentives.
For a guy who threw 33 touchdowns last year, led the NFL.
The issue. It's not about yards. It's
30
about
interceptions.
The picks.
He
the
had
33 picks.
Touchdowns, 30 picks, led the league in both categories. Those are very, very reasonable numbers. He is going to be the backup in New Orleans. He is set to make $1.1 million.
Wow.
I mean,
that's a bargain.
I'm just saying right now, if that's what you could get Jameis Winston for, why would you not have that as the backup here?
Yeah,
for $1.1 million.
Just thinking.
My gosh, yeah.
I mean, why would you not have Jameis Winston as your backup for $1 million?
You know who that sucks for? Cam
Newton.
That sucks for Cam Newton because he's going to end up having to do something very similar. Because if you're a team,
I don't see Cam Newton doing that.
Well, then he's not going to play.
Yeah,
then he's not going to play.
Yeah,
yeah.
I
because
see that Cam Newton's not signing for $1 million.
Well, I didn't think Jameis Winston would. I mean, look, if all of this is true, that he wanted to learn under Breeze, and so he's with, and he had a more lucrative offer somewhere else, and he's willing to play for $1.1 million as a backup to Drew Breeze, that I'm impressed by that. I'm just going to say that is the way to handle it if you're Jameis Winston. So,
do you want to put things in perspective?
Sure.
Do you know who the backup is to Deshaun Watson in Houston?
It's A.J. McCarron.
A.J. McCarron. He just re-upped for another year. Do you know what he got?
Probably about that, or is it more? $2 million? $3
million? $4
million. $4
million. A.J. McCarron. Do you know how many touchdown passes he threw last year?
One?
Zero.
Or zero?
Zero. He re-upped for 1 year, $4 million. Jameis Winston, who threw 33 touchdowns and 30 picks. Re-upped or signed with the Saints 1 year, $1.1 million.
A.J. McCarron, an avid iRacer.
Wow. Wow.
That's stunning. Are there incentives that Winston has? I did hear him in an interview yesterday that they played a clip of this morning where he said, hey, it's time for me to be humbled, and this is part of life, and this is where I am right now. He said all the right things, but, man, I had no idea it was that low. Good grief. It just means the phone wasn't ringing. Or he's willing to take less to go there. He thinks that that's the spot for him to revive his career. And if that's the case, that's a smart move.
Because he could...
It's one year, right? You're taking the money for 1 year with the hopes that, okay, I'll show you.
Do we believe the Titans had any interest whatsoever?
Nope.
I don't think so.
I don't either. $1 million, Jameis Winston could be your backup? As opposed to Logan Woodside or Cole McDonald?
Nope.
Wow.
I don't think they had interest.
Wow.
Because...
I don't think he would be interested. Like he,
no.
Why?
There's a commitment to, because there's a commitment to Tannehill for a couple years. There's
you
no
have,
commitment
you have no
after.
Chance. If Drew Brees, you have no chance of playing. You signed a 1 year deal, Drew Brees.
Right, but this is probably his last year.
Is not going to. Ryan, who's got a better chance of getting hurt, Drew Brees or Ryan Tannehill?
Ryan Tannehill.
Okay.
But well, Drew Brees got hurt last year.
He did, and it's rare.
Yes, he did.
It's
and he's
very
getting older.
Rare.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I think the increase is – I think that's debatable is who's got more chance of getting hurt, Breeze or Tannehill.
No, that's a very good point. But at the same time, I think Jameis looks at it as, okay, Breeze is probably going to play one more year. I can put myself
The job is open. The job might be open the following year.
Yeah.
And he's going to lay the groundwork for that, whereas in theory, it's much more complicated in Tennessee. I don't know that to be true for sure, but that would be my theory.
But I didn't think he'd sign for $1.1 million. I mean, I was putting him – I was kind of looking at what Marcus got with the Raiders and maybe doing a little bit of a comp there.
I thought your guesses were – if you have not seen the numbers, I would say if you were putting out a good number, both of your guesses was the right number. No one would ever guess 1.1.
The cap space too – has to be somewhat of an issue. I don't know how much the Saints have, but I would think that the Saints are probably coming to Winston saying, hey, we got a slot here, but we can't budget a whole lot of money for our backup spot, but this is what we can offer you. You can play under Drew Brees. Hey, Drew's not getting any younger. We're looking for the guy to succeed him. We just lost Teddy Bridgewater. that job could be yours if you come in here and do the right things. But this is the money we have. This is where it's at. And he found that attractive enough, that's for sure.
I just pulled up, just for this conversation, Marcus Mariota's contract is a two-year, $17.6 million contract. There is an out after this year, but he'll make $7.5 million guaranteed.
Yeah, that's a good deal for him.
That's a good deal. And look, he probably becomes – I think he wins that starting job at some point. Maybe not out of camp, but I think at some point he's starting for them. It's just my opinion. But
he made $46 million with the Bucks, Jameis Winston. 5 years, he made $46 million, and he's going to make $1 million with the Saints. Still not a bad gig. He's just going to probably just hold a clipboard.
He's looking at Teddy Bridgewater, though. He's looking at what Teddy Bridgewater did, and that now he got paid, and he's going to start for Carolina. So he's going, hey, I'll go study under Drew Brees, see how that works out after a year. Maybe I have a shot at taking over for the Saints. Maybe I have a shot somewhere else. But, you know, I don't think it's a bad plan.
We just always talk about
it. It's an image. The biggest thing is image repair. Even whether
he
plays one game, zero games, anything. He needs to come out of this at the end of the year with the coaches, with Sean Payton, with Drew Brees saying he was a good teammate. We enjoyed having him on our team. He's ready for the next step. He's repaired his career. He's still young. That is the number one goal. And that would be worth making just $1 million. If I'm his advisor, that's what I would advise. I would say, Jameis, you've got an image problem. Right? You haven't won a lot. You put up numbers, there's interceptions, but the perception of you is not a winner. True?
Very true.
Yeah.
And Darren, what is it you always say, that they're just words? I mean, he's showing some action now. He's, granted, it's a small sample size, but
it's one step of the action. It's not.
Sure.
He has signed a deal that looks like action. Now we need to see it play out.
Yep.
This time next year, we'll know if it was actions. Okay, that's
correct.
We'll know for sure, but let's let it play out and see what happens. And I don't know. I don't know if it may be great. I'm assuming if he truly wants to get back to being in that starting role and get back to being the guy, then he will play his cards right, and he will, you know, stand in line and be there and be a good teammate, learn and do all the right things, but still need to see that happen. Jameis hasn't exactly shown that in his career, really, ever. On college,
we had a pretty respected guy in Bruce Arians, who's developed plenty of quarterbacks, basically say, we're looking at other options.
Yep.
You know, they didn't make any phones about it. Yeah,
right.
it was quick.
There's
a lot of choices out there. He's not one of them.
Yep. All right, we come back. Let's get into some of the things that we talked about with Nightingale, and just because I do think there were some things that jumped out at me. So we'll discuss some of that on the other side here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. A little Joan Jett bringing us back. So one of the things that jumped out at me is this is going to happen, I believe, in all the sports, I think. To me, it just seems inevitable. There's going to be things that are going to be tried, things that are going to be done. And just like anything, when we see, usually it's the second-tier leagues that come in and they do all this crazy stuff because they have to. They don't make it. They don't survive. But the big boy company, the big boy sport, the one above them that is the top dog, takes some stuff away from that. And I suspect that's going to happen here. I just do. And one of the things I think is going to be an easy one to point to is Bob Nightingale said they're going to be, you know, they need to be uniform throughout. They're going to already realign these divisions. They're going to have a DH. You know, pitchers are not going to be batting. I think it's been heading that way. It's been going that direction. And I think this may be the tipping point. When they do it, they're going to be like, why exactly are the pitchers batting? And we'll just go DH throughout baseball, both leagues. I think that's going to happen. You get anybody else believe that?
Oh, I think once the DH is instituted across the league, they don't go back. Ryan pushed back on me this morning when I brought that up. He said, well, I don't know if I'd say that's 100%. No, I think it is. And like I said to him and I said to Willie at the end of the Bob Nightingale interview, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. I'm a National League guy, so I like the small ball and the pitchers having to hit or bunt. And, you know, we talked to David Price. He's excited about hitting again, being in the National League. You know, so there's some of that I like, but I'm also not going to worry about it. And if they go across the board, I do think it's kind of silly that you have one league doing it one way and one doing the other. So I think there's no going back. I think once they put it in, both leagues are going to have it.
I've been okay with it for all these years. So I'm not dying for it to happen. If it happens, then I can live with it if that's what they decide. I still enjoy the strategy of when to hit for the pitcher, all of that stuff. That is a good thing for me. But if that's how they go and that's the one thing that changes, then I'm okay with it. I'm not wild about Yankees and Mets in the same division, Cubs and White Sox in the same division. I still like the American and National League. I call me traditionalist, whatever, but I would hope that they would go back to that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I don't think you change. You have to now, you know, for all of this, but I think you go back to the American League and National League. Now, do you jumble up some divisions or, you know, move some teams around? Okay, you can look at that, but there are some things that I believe you have to leave as they are.
I've got to be honest. I am kind of surprised. Baseball, they're always – look, these owners are rich for a reason. They're always looking to save a dollar, to make a dollar. I'm surprised Major League Baseball hasn't tossed this around. Their sport is the longest. They do the most travel. And, you know, we've seen this in other sports where they're trying to load management and, you know, the travel, how it takes a toll. Willie, you know that. You know it's real. Whether you're flying first class or not on a private jet, it's still travel, man. It's real. It takes its toll if you're flying across the country. I'm surprised that baseball has – you've never heard that the Cubs and the White Sox be in the same division, that the Yankees and the Mets be in the same division, that the Indians and the Reds be in the same division, that the Royals and the Cardinals be in the same division, that the Angels and the Dodgers be in the same division – and play each other more and cut down on travel and cost. I mean, that's what these teams are always looking to do. Cut cost. Save money. Make more money. Put more money in the owner's pockets. Well, there's one way to do it. I mean, can you imagine what a Major League Baseball team spends on travel per season? Probably make you faint if you saw the numbers.
Yeah, true.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's expensive.
Although you're playing three-game series. I don't know. I do wonder, what is the mileage, given the fact that you're playing three-game series and not one-game situations like you do in the NHL or the NBA? So I wonder if the mileage is really that much different.
Well, how many times do they play each
costs?
Other in each division? What's the number of times per year?
18.
I was going to say, isn't it close to 20 times a year?
Right, but okay, let's say that the Predators go to they go to Chicago three times. Well, they play three games. When the Braves go to Chicago three times, they're playing nine games, but they're still going there the same amount of times. Now, they're spending more days there, so it's more the hotel costs probably than the actual travel itself.
But if you had the Cubs, the White Sox, and the Brewers all in the same division, they can bus to those games. Yeah, they still have to get hotel rooms, but you don't have to get on planes. You can bus to those games.
True.
Well, that'll be something to watch for. If they do that, they'll probably be conducting those studies and doing a comparison, and here's how much money we've saved.
Right.
All of that stuff.
So let me ask you guys this. They play 100 games this year, which is lofty, in my opinion.
But, I agree. I think it's lofty, too.
But they play 100 games in this season. How many do they play in 2021? Based on this conversation.
162.
You think they stick with 162?
How in the world could you – where are you going with this? Because how could you be talking about a college football season in the spring but not baseball starting up on time?
Well, that's not why I'm asking the question. You brought this up of, are there things they can take away from this that they could learn and maybe they make changes? You know, you use the example of playing different rules in the minor league system to see if it'll work in major league. Well, here's the opportunity to potentially shorten the season. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it would happen that quick. Do I think that there's a real shot that could happen from this? Yes, but wouldn't happen overnight. No. I don't believe they come out of it going, oh, yeah, that's great. Let's take off 14 games.
So maybe 2022, which is what Bob brought up, of that's where you could actually see some changes. You may be right that it might be lofty to say that it's going to be the next season, but I do wonder if they look at this and they go, okay, you know, 100 games is probably too short of a season for us, but 130, somewhere in that range, maybe even 150. That I could totally see.
I've always thought around 144 would be a good number.
Sure.
And call it a day.
But I think given that they're going to, in theory, they'll miss this many games this year, next year won't be the year that they consider less than 162.
Right. I agree.
But you see where I'm going with that, my way of thinking.
It's a down the road thing. It's just it will not be quick. That's a down the road thing that I think they'll just continue to talk about. Look, I think they're going to be talking about a lot of things. Don't forget, you just nailed it, Willie. You're making my point for me. The 2020 is going to obviously take its toll on everybody. It already has, and it will. Okay. And so everybody's going to be looking for ways to get some of that back, right? Because everybody's getting popped right in the face, and this one's going to hurt, and it's going to hurt for a while. So if you're always looking for ways to, you know, get some of that money back, that's why I'm throwing this out. Honestly, I think all these leagues, but especially baseball, if you could come up with a way to travel less and, you know, bus more, travel less, what they spend on the road is – it just has to be astronomical what it is throughout the course of a season. That is a way to do it. Play more division games. Maybe play even more division games than 18.
I think where you're really going to see it is in the college ranks. I do wonder scheduling in college down the road, non-conference scheduling – maybe even some conference realignment with more geographic sense. I do wonder if that's down the road as a result of all of this. You know, if you're going to realign in baseball for this, then why in the heck wouldn't you realign the ACC with a team in Boston and a team in Miami? You know, all of the, you know, we used to have some geographic sense in the conferences, but when that all blew up about 10 or 15 years ago, remember all that craziness? Think about the travel, and I'm not just talking about for football.
You're saying West Virginia in the Big 12?
Exactly. The West Virginia lacrosse team or the West Virginia tennis team playing the
Texas. Right.
Go to the state of Texas. Some of that stuff never made sense to begin with. Now you might have some conferences going, you know what, it was a little more practical the other way, and now we got to do this because we just don't have enough money to do it otherwise.
I don't think there's any doubt that's going to happen.
I do wonder if we're going that way.
I don't think there's any doubt. Programs won't be able to do it because of the hit. I mean, there's those sports that you're talking about, they won't even be able to do it. Some of them won't. They'll be like, we can't be traveling long distances. We don't have the money. Yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Think about non-conference college basketball scheduling and what
it is going to be
practicality
very,
that yes. has for some teams, like Duke going to New York. I mean, Duke plays everywhere, right? They play – Kentucky plays everywhere, right?
They're not the example because they got the money. The big boy, the Blue Bloods, they have the money. You got to – you know, it's the smaller programs. They're going to all be probably playing each other very geographically, you know. They're all going to be trying to be close range, close proximity. Right, and Austin Peay is going to try to make sure they play, you know, everybody in this 60-mile radius. Right, I just think that's what you're going to see is you're going to see a lot of games being scheduled close by.
Well, and to look at this entire situation, you obviously want it under different circumstances, but all sports have been given a gift, so to speak, of they can experiment. They can look at all the things that may have been discussed in a back room. Now they can, you know, whether it's collegiate or professional, they can mess with that and try and improve some of the things that you guys just brought up, whether it's the travel costs for smaller schools or realignment in baseball. You know, do you get rid of interleague play to reduce the schedule? I mean, these are all things they can now experiment with and turn something that has been, you know, awful and affected our world, but at least, you know, they have this opportunity now. They can look at it from that standpoint and try and turn a negative into somewhat of a positive in with being able to experiment with this.
We'll come back and close up shop on hour number two of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Tim Hasselbeck coming up at noon. We'll talk about or get his reaction to the NFL draft, the virtual NFL draft. Chris Mason at 1 o'clock. Speaking of hockey, we've talked about that. We had Scott Nickel on in the first hour. And I'm flipping through last night channels, and I just happened to stumble upon NBC Sports Network. And lo and behold, they are showing the 1974 Stanley Cup Final, Game 6, the Boston Bruins and the Philadelphia Flyers. And
oh,
I'm
boy.
Sitting there, and I'm watching, and I'm like, wow, that's so cool. There's Bobby Orr. Man, there's Phil Esposito. There's Bobby Clark. Man. What? Who's that? Who's that redhead on the bench? That's Terry Crisp. One Terry Crisp sitting there yelling or saying something, very spirited conversation on the bench as they were trying to hold on to their 1-0 lead and finish things off and win the Stanley Cup. And, of course, they did. It was cool to see Terry in 1974. Man, so cool.
Well, yes.
There's an amazing clip. There's an amazing clip at the end that has recently made the rounds. And Crispy has a great story about it, too. The handshake line. You know, the fans started coming on the ice. And that's crazy to me. Now, think about today. They try to corral, even on a baseball field or a football field, the fans from coming onto the stands. They can't always do it. It's still overflow sometimes. It's one thing to have people running around on a field. They had people running around on the ice with no skates, you know, crazy people. They look, ever seen the movie Dazed and Confused with Matthew McConaughey? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a 70s piece or whatever. Some guys right out of that central casting, they jumped in the handshake line. So there's Terry Crisp and there's Reggie Leach and there's, you know, Rick McLeish. And then here's a guy, you know, who's like 15 or 16 years old with long hair and a T-shirt and jeans on. And he's just shaking hands with everybody. It's hysterical. It's like times have changed.
You're saying it was a little looser security?
A little bit looser, yeah. Yeah, and the players, they just shook hands with the guy. The guy had a beer in one hand and shaking hands in the other.
Surprised Crispy didn't get that
Crispy.
Beer.
Oh, ask Crispy about it. He remembers that. And he was like, well, we'll just go with the flow.
I was driving around yesterday running some errands, and I have my music on shuffle from my phone. And a lot of times with Apple Music, if you open something on your computer, it automatically adds it. And so I'm just driving along, and all of a sudden, I hear Terry Crisp on my radio explaining something that I didn't know about Cale Hulse. And I started laughing. I then took a video of it, sent it to my friends, and I said, this, in fact, is the greatest moment in Predators history when we learn about soccer kicks and Cale Hulse. Pete, I hope you're listening.
Never gets old. I've probably listened to it 100 times at least.
Yeah. So funny.
I laugh
every time.
Like I'm hearing it for the first time. That's just
Don't
so.
Don't be surprised if you get a text on your phone, Chase, in the next 10 minutes.
Yep.
Isn't
I probably
just,
will.
In fact,
you know
we
what?
Just got one.
You know, I didn't even, at first, I didn't stop because I'm like, oh, 74 Flyers. Yes, it did not take long for me to connect the dots of, oh, 74 Flyers. Oh, that's crispy. I literally stopped because isn't it just crazy to watch that sport in 1974? Looking at, you know, what they wore, what they didn't wear.
Right.
And, you know, what the uniforms, what the pads, what everything looked like, the sticks in 1974 to 46 years later to where it is today. It's crazy.
I happened to catch the 82 final, and even it, even though it's 8 years after 1974, it still looks so different than what we see today. And that is something, remember Eric Nystrom, who played for the Predators for a long time? His dad, Bobby Nystrom, played. Yeah, Bobby Nystrom played for all four of the Islanders teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things his theory was, he said, when you have less pads, you can't hit as hard, right? So it's all relative, and this has been thrown out there in football, is if you had actually less padding, you might have less injuries, the collisions wouldn't be quite as hard because, you know, you don't have this hard armor on anymore. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. It's an interesting theory that, you know, your body didn't take any more punishment even though you had less padding on.
Well, it's the whole baseball argument, right? I mean, when they started putting on the body armor on their arms, like Bonds and Bagwell and all those guys – Ortiz.
Yeah, it changed the game.
It changed the game
how you could
pitch.
Because
those guys weren't going to get out of the way of a pitch. They'll just get hit. They're like, I'm not going to get hurt. Look at all this stuff I got on me. If a ball comes anywhere near me, I'm just going to get hit, and the first I go. And,
yep.
You know, all the people that were screaming about that, they wouldn't be doing that if they weren't allowed to wear that stuff, and obviously that's true.
Yeah, they've had to almost enforce the rule of yes, you actually do have to try to get out of the way of the ball. Otherwise, because I still think there's a lot of hitters that honestly don't try to get out of the way. They'll just take the ball off the arm or off the pad, especially if they have a pad there.
Well, it depends on the pitcher.
And that distinctly changes how the pitchers have to approach it.
Yep.
So the game has evolved a lot. It's the same thing. Like you said, Darren, you watch a game from 1974, you're like, wow, the game looks different. Well, that's the same thing if you watch a basketball game or a baseball game or a football game from that long ago. You just see, and I love it. I love doing it because you do like seeing that mark in time and how things have evolved since then, for better or worse. Some things you like better, some things you're like, man, I wish it was like it was back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, watching a basketball game without a three-point line, that's something for me.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a good one.
That's all I've ever known is a three-point line. But, you know.
And how different would it have changed history if that line was there, you know, since 1950, right? I mean, what?
Sure.
What if we, you know, had 30 more years of college basketball with a three-point line? Would that have changed history in some cases?
I don't think so.
I would think so, too.
It's like, too, you know.
It would have changed guys' careers and resumes.
Yeah.
And how much money they made and how we view them as a player, right? Because their point totals would have gone way up.
And I think for me,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I do think there's a certain amount of truth out for a lot of guys. But remember, the defense would have been different, too. You wouldn't have just let good shooters shoot from out there if you get 3 points for it. Right?
Yeah.
It stands to reason. It's evolved like, hey, this guy's actually making these out here. He gets 3 points for these?
Yeah.
We gotta change our defense.
That's right.
Think about if the sack had been an official stat, but wasn't it 1982-ish?
Yeah, something like that. You're right. They still try to go back retroactively and figure out how many sacks everybody had.
Right.
Well, I'd love to know some of the 70s in particular. I'd love to know what they came up with.
Have they done that? Like, I'm going to do that right now. I'm going to go to Pro Football Reference and see if they have figured out if they've actually put estimates of sacks.
Have they actually done the sack totals for the Steel Curtain, the Purple People Eaters, the Orange Crush?
Yeah. Well, let me look.
Killer Bees. Have we ever gone back and done that? I'd love to know.
I don't know. I haven't. I haven't gone back and looked.
You haven't gone
back
and looked?
Yeah, I'm looking at Mean Joe Green. Sacks, it's just empty.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's got all of the games played. It's got his he had one interception. It's got his fumble recoveries, but sadly, it has no sacks.
It's a shame.
Yeah, 0.0.
It's a shame.
All right, Isn't that crazy?
Crazy.
I never even thought about it. So the whole Steel Curtain, we don't even know who got the sacks.
Nope.
Who got how many sacks?
He has the wow. That is just weird to look at.
All right, we'll come back. Tim Hasselbeck.
I would think that somebody would do that. Somebody would go look at all that. We could ask Tim about this. Couldn't somebody at NFL Films go back and watch all the games?
I would think
so. And determine the sacks?
In these times, why don't they get this done now? They've got the time.
They got the time. This is the time to do it. Yeah.
Let me tell you something. You want to get a buzz and get people talking about it, your findings, how cool would that be?
Oh, that would be so cool. Mean Joe Green, Too Tall Jones, Harvey Martin, all these guys in the 70s, do the sack totals. Just start with the 70s and then work your way back.
Gosh. I think we just stumbled upon a really cool idea. Just not sure it's going to get back to the right people. All right, we'll come back. Tim Hasselbeck to start the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.